Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 473. I am going to SF Sketchfest February 7th and 8th. To do San Francisco sketch comedy things.
Ooh, comedy things.
Comedy things, yeah. Well, we have the Nerdist Podcast February 7th, but that is sold out. But the Saturday, February 8th, I'm doing three shows, Kyle.
Oh, tell me more.
Well, in the morning, we're doing a live reading of Sanjay and Craig,
ooh,
which is an animated show that I'm a talking snake on.
You should wear a big snake costume.
So I could.
People know
which
one's
the snake. That's a good idea. That's a really good idea. Malik Pancholi is going to be on that show as well as John DiMaggio and Nolan North and Matt Jones.
Just a collection of national treasures on this show.
Listen, you got Bender, you got Nathan Drake,
I'm already sold. I feel
you
like
you got Badger.
I'm already at Shut Up and Take My Money.
And then you got Malik Pancholi, who was Jonathan on the 30 Rock.
Oh, that was Jack Donaghy's assistant.
That was Jack Donaghy's assistant. Oh, that's really interesting. I wasn't aware you watched 30 Rock. I thought you went more down the.
Down the Parks and Rec hole?
Yep.
It's a good word. Hashtag rec hole.
Parks and Rec hole. So that's Sanjay and Craig in the morning. And then in the early evening, I am hosting a screening of Revenge of the Nerds with the cast of Revenge of the Nerds.
That's
we're
going
to do a Q&A afterwards. And then later that night, I'm doing Bring the Rock with Greg Barrett, where we tell stories and sing songs.
That's one of my favorite shows. It's a
good show. I used to do that show all the time at Largo, and then he only does it like once a year now.
You get to break out the pipes.
I'm going
to
break out the pipes. It's going to be hard because Sanjay and Craig yells.
Ooh.
Craig yells. So having to do a lot of, I'm a snake and I'm farting, which is...
Then I think it's time to break out your long-awaited Leonard Cohen songs.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Just whispers through something.
Yeah.
Or like a Nick Drake.
The beast in me is caged by real and
I would watch that. I feel like San Francisco's ready for something
like
that.
You think they're ready for that?
Yeah.
Well, Nolan North played Nathan Drake.
Oh.
So they just have the same
Nick
last
Drake,
name.
Nathan yeah. Drake.
Yeah, there's no connection really there at all. This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Hover. You're going to want to secure a domain name.
I am.
And Hover is the way that you can do that, Kyle Clark.
Oh, good call.
What's a domain name that you might want to look for? Parks and Rec-hole?
I'm going to go Rec-hole.
Just Rec-hole? All right. So you get... By the way, W-R-E-C-K is a different...
Oh, yeah. No, I tried to get that. That was gone a long time ago.
Like, you mean recreational hole.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rec-hole. Parks and Rec-hole.
Yeah. Recreational hole's still filthy.
It's still bad. There's no iteration of it that's okay. But Hover makes it super easy to buy domains. You don't have to be an expert to get a domain if you've never registered a domain, but I feel like most people who listen to the podcast probably, like I do, have like 30 domains that they continue to re-register every year that they will never use, but it's fun.
Beyond Papal Nip Slips, what's another classic Hardwick domain?
Dude, my nipples are huge.
Oh, that's a good.
.com, .net, and .org.
That .org.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a new organization.
Well,
that
gives it a little bit of spiritual weight. Like,
yeah.
It's like there's something to it.
The Huge Nipple Foundation.
That's right. Hover takes all the hassle and friction out of registering a domain. It's super easy. There's powerful tools to manage the domain. Anyone can do it. And then you can start building your web presence right away. You're going to need a domain to establish a URL to then put your web thing on there.
Oh, that's how it works. I've been doing the internet all wrong.
Well, all you have to do is search for a few keywords, parks and or rec hole, and Hover will show you the best available options or the suggestions. And it's super, super easy, and new customers get 10% off with the offer code. Are you ready?
I am.
What do you think the offer code is?
I'm really hoping it's rec hole.
It's not rec hole, although we could talk to them about that. It's something that might come out of your rec hole, which is burrito.
Oh,
yep.
That's often coming out of my rec hole.
Yep, it's a burrito, not a burrito, burrito. Usually we do the offer code Nerdist, but I think some people will be bummed because they're so used to Nerdist. But we're going to mix it up a little bit on you. 10% off using the offer code burrito at hover.com. Register your domain today, and thanks for their support. This episode is Broken Bells.
Ooh.
You've heard of them.
I love the Broken Bells.
I love the Broken Bells.
You get the James Mercer. You get the Danger Mouse. You put them together.
They make the Broken Bells. Individually, they're working bells.
Yes. Functional bells. Together, then they smush together.
And they break.
Yes.
Yeah, from smashing the bells
together. It's a classic story. Yep. Tale as old as time.
It is. Song as old as rhyme.
Yeah.
Beauty and the Beast. Good. Thank you for playing along with that. But we went to I don't know what they're actually called, but we went to Danger Mouse Studios.
There's no better version of that name.
There's Danger Mouse.
Danger Mouse Studios.
I don't think it's called Danger Mouse Studios. But we went to Brian's. Brian Burton is his actual name, and we went to Studios. And Brian is.
We should clarify. A lot of the songs. Brian Burton, and not the classic cartoon character Danger Mouse.
Not the cartoon that ran from like 83 to 92, which was great. By the way,
one of the best theme songs.
Danger Mouse. Beauty and the Beast. So Brian Burton has produced a lot of the songs that you probably like. He's an amazing producer and a musician, and he and James Mercer just sort of came together to form this entity that has its own and the first Broken Bells album, which I adored. Instantly, I was on board. I'm like, they found a sound. Like, they didn't have to search for it. They had it right away. You know a Broken Bells song when you hear it. And they have a new album that's out now, Kyle, called After the Disco. And it's February 4th is the date. That drops into stores and digital retailers. And so the guys did a song for us.
And it's probably the prettiest thing we've recorded on this podcast.
Yeah, so I really get super excited about when musicians agree to play songs on the podcast. And so they actually recorded this in their studio, which is a version of their song Holding On for Life. And it fucking sounds like it should be on an album.
When you played it for us, Jonah was like, oh, is this the single? You're like, no, this is our version of the song.
They just made this for us.
So somebody start isolating those tracks.
Well, I would love to just take all of the... We've had some really great musical performances on from...
Wilco to
Tom Kenny to Ben Folds
to Paul Goddamn Williams,
Paul Williams, Tenacious D, Brendan Small, Lindy Ortega. Like, we've had Sarah Watkins.
Dear God.
So we could put together, you know, like, we'd never be able to. I feel like we should put it together and just release it as a charity album, like, just do it for a charity.
Oh, yeah.
But it's always tough to get the labels and things to sign off on these types of things. So maybe someday we'll be able
to figure that out.
But we have a pretty spectacular body of work now that we should put out at some point. But anyway,
now I just want to greedily ask you for those, you know, off mic and just get all those things.
I'll send them to you, Kyle.
All right.
But if you share them, I will destroy you.
Oh.
All right. Here's the Nerds Podcast number 473 with Broken Bells.
Beauty and the Beast.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
When I think about the When I actually think about the landscape of what pop music was, like the top charts from the, because I listen to the 80s station a lot.
Mm.
I listen to the new wave and the 80s station, and just to hear like, you know, John Waite had a hit, you know, like that would never fly now. Like that guy would never fly.
Well,
now.
You know, the biggest case of it is Christopher Cross, the guy who, because of MTV, like stopped having a career.
We're just talking about this.
Oh, really? Because he just didn't fit the bill?
That was what they said. Like, you know, Christopher Cross is just like a dorky-looking dude that had a beautiful voice and had great songs. Yeah. And then everyone got to see what he looked like. And all the girls who were swooning over his words just were like, oh, he looks like my uncle. You know? They say it's what killed his career.
I just like Huey Lewis because I feel like wasn't his Behind the Music just completely dramaless?
That's exactly what we were just talking about.
He was like, it was great.
Yeah, and then things slowed down, so we stopped, spent time with our families. Good dudes, good outlook.
Listen, I know you guys are working in since you're working in music, I don't know if you guys want this Toshiba boombox. It's got a cassette deck on it.
Tapes are back, man.
Are they really, though?
Burger Records is this guy that got all the cassette tape rights from a lot of different bands, from like labels that didn't care because they don't make tapes anymore. Last year, he sold 600,000 cassette tapes.
Holy shit.
Yeah, and he just is this dude from fucking Fullerton that just has a little shop, and he just puts out like, you know, he does a lot of Sub Pop bands. He'll put out their tapes and stuff like that. And then he'll get like old punk bands.
As a novelty thing, sort of.
No, because the kids are buying cassette tapes.
Why are the kids buying
as a novelty.
Tapes? No.
They think it's cute, right?
I don't know. That's what I thought.
I mean, to get a cassette player, you've got to go to a thrift store or something, right?
There's a record store in my neighborhood called Jackknife Records and Tapes, and I get into arguments with the owner guy because he's like, yeah, I'm going to expand the tape section. I was like, don't do that. And he's like, no, it just sounds better. I was like, you can't. It's universally known to be – it's like there's the floppy, like, you know, flexi disc record, and then there's the cassette tape.
That'd be rad.
Yeah, but kids are buying
putting our shit out on zip drives.
Yeah.
Listen, God, the kids love jazz drives these days. So if you want to bump it up to 100 megs,
nice.
Yeah. That's the way to do it.
But it's also for, like, younger bands. It's become so cheap. It's like, you know, 10 cents to have a tape pressed. Or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
You know, okay. I'm almost even kind of annoyed with, like, it's a cassette that's actually a flash drive, or it's a cassette that's a phone case. Like, the cassette, it was not a great piece of technology.
Though my current wife, I made her one of those mixtapes.
Current wife,
yes, as opposed to all the others. No, but like my wife, when we were first starting dating, I had one of those flash drives.
I'm going to start calling my wife.
current wife.
See how long that lasts.
Yeah, our friend Rob Schraub refers to his wife as his ex-girlfriend. It's not really wrong. But yeah, a little mixtape thing. Make a list.
But the audio degrades. Like, the audio degrades. If you listen to it like 10 times, the audio is degraded by that time. Yeah. So why would people?
Do you remember metal tapes?
Yes.
Metal tapes. What really was going on? Was that actually any better?
I think the good thing about tapes, though, I remember when I was in college, I used to put stuff on a cassette when an album came out that I liked the artist, but I wasn't so sure about the album the first time I heard it. I would put on a cassette and just leave it in the car because that way I couldn't fast forward stuff. And I would just live with it for a week or two. And that way I could really tell. And a lot of times I liked the album better. Sometimes I was like, no, even after a week.
Yeah.
But that was the real test, because if CD, it's kind of... I don't know. I just didn't have the discipline to not skip or whatever. But on a cassette, you just leave it in, and when you get in, it's right where it picked up, and it's running and it's going.
That's a good point. And then you get a sense of the album.
You get a sense of the album itself, and it's constantly, you know, it has auto reverse football.
Yeah,
that's a weird way to do it, and kind of force yourself to do it.
I don't think anyone has the attention span to do that anymore. Like, what do you mean I can't control every millisecond of my time?
Yeah. That's why I started getting back into listen to vinyl. It's just because it forces you to listen to the sequence in which they chose it.
Yeah.
What was that scene in Boogie Nights where the guy's talking about he like makes a tape of his records and he puts the songs in the way he wants them? He's like, I'm not going to let any guy tell me which order to listen to his songs in.
Yeah, I just don't think I don't think people are just too – we're just too spoiled. Technology has spoiled us so much that – I mean, is that irritating in the sense that, you know, you spend a lot of time and you make an album and you put the songs in the order that you feel like, you know, they should be in, but then people are like, no, I want to do it this way.
Or the shuffle thing. That was the first time that I got frustrated by that stuff is a friend of mine was using the shuffle feature on their iPod. And it just, I was kind of like, don't you know how long they sweated over the old track? You know? Yeah.
I think that was
10 years ago.
You like to think of yourself as cool as the people whose albums you bought. So you're like, well, they made us do it. Like, you kind of think you're self-important, like going, we know what we're doing. We know how to do this. It's supposed to be this way. It's supposed to be that way. It's the same thing as Pink Floyd, man. It's the same thing. Like, you're not going to like move around the tracks on Dark Side of the Moon. This album is obviously as good.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you think when you're done. Every album, when you're done with it, you think this is going to be the next Dark Side of the Moon, right? So like, don't even think about moving it around. This is supposed to be the way it
exactly.
is.
That's why a lot of
think.
Yeah, it's a lot not, of bands do that thing where they like let the tracks like flow into each other. Like that Waves record from last year where it's like everything just almost like where you would be an asshole if you tried to just take one track and move it around because it would like leading up to something and then it would just be a completely
it's just
different.
It's like girl talk where you're like, where do I stop? I don't know where to come in and stop.
I asked the label if we could put, I can't remember what album it was. I think it was a Gnarls record. I said, can we put the track markers in the middle of the songs? Because I wanted people to listen to it all the way through.
Oh, nice.
I was like, can we do that?
Nice. Just pretty clever.
Well, apparently it wasn't. Because
is that what you actually did?
No. And they settled for releasing a one-track version of the album that was backwards. That was my second idea.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, that's neat.
Mm, it wasn't that cool.
No, at least you tried something.
It was backwards. I tried. How do you mean?
It actually sounded pretty cool. Some songs sounded almost as good.
You actually plays the songs backwards.
The entire album from beginning to end backwards.
Yeah.
As one track. And we released the vinyl that way too. So if you play the vinyl, we had two vinyl. One that was the album and one that was the album backwards.
And so, did you do that thing? You know how you can get the grooves reversed where you put
I didn't start the needle.
Oh, okay.
I thought that sounded kind of complicated. So I just thought, just do a double vinyl. I don't like double vinyl records where you have to get up every three songs and turn it over. I can't stand that.
Yeah, the 180 grams.
I just won't even get a record if it's like that for the most part. Yeah. But they were like, well, do double album. I was like, well, we'll just, if someone wants to listen to the album backwards, they can put on this version of it and you can listen to it backwards. It's very interesting.
Yeah, any hidden messages?
Cool, that,
no hidden messages.
You started the trend of forward masking where you actually had to listen to the album forward to get the songs.
And then I think people were like, I think we gave it away. The backwards one.
Oh, nice.
People are like, well, you're giving away the album. They'll just reverse it, and then they can. But it's like they want to do all that. They can just.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly.
Then they earned it. You know, if you want it.
More power to them.
But it is. It's kind of. It's kind of interesting to piecemeal your. I mean, I'm not. As I say, like people don't have attention spans. I do exactly the same thing, but it. I guess in theory, it's probably pretty much the same as like, I'm going to read chapter 4 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Then I'm going to read chapter 12 of Game of Thrones. Then I'm going to read chapter 13 of Confederacy of Dunces. Like, of basically just, these are the only chunks of the story that I want to hear right now.
You ever like go to a girl and make her a mix book?
I make her a mix book.
Yeah. These are my favorite chapters from you.
So that's what they had to do but years ago.
A long time ago.
I don't expect you to remember this, but I met you guys because we did Jimmy Fallon together, and it was the time you played Ghost Inside, and it was right after the first Broken Bells album came out, and I was one of the ones who, as were many others, who got it, downloaded the tracks, a couple of the tracks, the second they were available. And I kind of nerded out on you guys after the show, and I was like, I think I nerded out a little too much. Like, you guys are really great, and I've been listening to the track. I mean, I did that thing that people do. I did exactly the same thing that people do, where you go like, I'm experienced enough. I know how to talk to people.
Yeah.
This isn't going to happen. I was just really, you guys are great.
Get in your head immediately.
Yeah. But I
remember the show. I remember doing Fallon. I don't remember if it was good or not. But I remember doing it. Do you remember doing it?
Yeah.
It was like I put like the audience behind you and
they're
all rocking out.
Yeah.
Where it looks like you're in like an industrial zone.
Yeah.
Almost a post-apocalyptic, like people just want to party out to forget that the world has collapsed.
Yeah. Every time I see like the audience they put in to like rock out to a band, it always seems so like Japanese TV shows where you see that and they just have a bunch of people doing this no matter what. You know,
that was I worked at MTV in the 90s and that was all of MTV. Like most of MTV stuff looked totally chaotic. But it was really just, let's just put 14 people over there in that corner.
Some teenage girls.
Yeah, exactly. Right, yeah. And then, but if you could see outside what the camera was seeing, it was just desolate. There was nothing. It was a completely controlled, just security guys.
A nice wide picture of the Smells Like Teen Spirit video shoot would be really funny looking. Just a bunch of people in the middle of a soundstage rocking out.
like a boombox playing the song.
The guy going by with the hi-hat.
It's not in slow motion.
Yeah. It's coming out of a stereo.
So now that the new album's coming out in February, is it 4th or 14th?
4th, I believe.
The 4th.
Yeah.
Are you completely emotionally like it's out there almost? Are you focused on new things or how does it feel like days before something comes out?
We're anticipating it. We're mostly doing promo stuff like this, interviews and we're rehearsing and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're looking forward to finding out what happens when it comes out.
I mean, I stopped listening to the albums once they're out. It's kind of like my last week or two to get to like listen to it on my own. So I listen to it a lot usually before it comes out, whatever album it is. And then like the last Bells record, I've only listened to maybe two or three times. And since really we stopped touring.
Oh, you should revisit it. It's really good. Yeah. Holds up.
We did one time. We did right before we did this last album. We listened to it, but I remember all that time. I've listened to this new album like countless times, like as we're making it, and then now that it's done and everything else, because it's really, it's your own album. Like, it's mine. Like, I you know, I did it with you. We get to, I get to walk around my neighborhood listening to it, and nobody else has it. And it's just my, it's very, very personal for a while. And then once it's out there and everything else, it's a little weird.
Yeah, once it gets popular,
it's a little weird to listen to it in that way. It's just, it changes. But for me, I get to still listen to it a lot, and just because I kind of know that I'm not going to listen to it anymore, and it's like, it's kind of done once it comes out. But I'm looking forward to coming out too.
What do you hear when you're listening to it? Like, when you've created something and you've listened to it hundreds of times, what is it that you're starting to, what do you focus in on after that long?
I listen to it. I mean, this may sound weird. I'm separate from it. Like, I don't hear at a certain point, it just kind of happens where I'm not judging it. I'm not thinking I should have done this or should have done that. I'm just listening to it kind of. I don't remember really doing all the parts or any of that stuff. I'm listening to James sing. I'm just listening to it and enjoying it and not.
Your perspective changes completely.
I don't remember doing half the stuff on there. I'm like, I don't even know where that came from or how or why. And so you're just listening.
I guess a metaphor or a comparison would be, an analogy would be like getting dressed for a party, and then you get to the party and now you have a different perspective of what you're wearing.
Yeah.
Oh, should I have worn the checkered pants? Or
yeah. The answer's always yes.
It's like that public, once it goes public, it changes your perspective of it.
And does it ever sort of backfire where you kind of go, ah, shit, I thought that was really awesome, but now in the landscape of everything else?
All the time. I think always, every time, I'm always like, this is easily the best record you're ever going to hear. And then it comes out and then it hits the world and it's obviously not. And then you go, well, that's because you haven't heard the new one. And whatever the new thing you're working on, it's like, that's the next best thing. But you kind of have to feel that way, I think, in a way.
Well, it's important, because if you're constantly like,
I do.
If you're constantly holding on to the first one, then you're not really growing at all. So I feel like it's, you know, like these things that you make are essentially emotional snapshots of whatever sort of weird organic conglomeration of things happened at that time.
Exactly.
And then you don't even really feel that way anymore, because you're a different person. You moved on.
That's funny. I was just watching, they have a bunch of clips of Liam Gallagher watching a bunch of Oasis videos and doing commentary on them. And the entire time he's just going, ugh, oh God.
But he was doing that then.
Yeah, but it's just like looking back and just completely.
He's incredibly entertaining to watch.
Yeah.
I've gone down the K-hole of YouTube on the Oasis tape. It's so funny, man.
Their Unplugged was unbelievable. Oh, just like Liam wouldn't play, so he just fucking heckled from the rafters the entire time.
Yeah.
It was so weird.
Yeah.
It was so weird. I
antics. I love it.
Yeah.
I almost am sad that they did not exist at a time where there was social media, so you could really follow the they would have been such a
brutal,
great social media reality show.
There's another Gallagher Twitter war happening. Get online.
Exactly. Hashtag cunt.
Cunt.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, are they cool now, or do they?
I don't fuck it. I can't tell.
They all
seem like, even in that Live Forever doc, the one about, like, you know, Oasis and Blur and Massive Attack and stuff. It's like, even like Damon Albarn and the Gallagher guys still seem like they hate each other from that one day they both released a single. It's just that everyone just seems to hate each other. They just seem all miserable, is what it seems like.
You have to be an English lead singer. You have to be. You have to have a chip on your shoulder and be.
It's
kind of part of it. Otherwise, they don't accept you.
Yeah, wasn't that sort of the thing about when Franz Ferdinand's album won that year? They were like, they seemed normal. Like, everyone was disappointed that they were just kind of like nice, normal guys. Yeah. Like, they weren't tortured twats.
Well, they might have been.
They're Scottish, though, right? They're Scottish. That doesn't.
It doesn't really count.
A little different. Maybe they're nicer there or something. I don't know.
or do you, when you're looking at producing, which I assume is the mindset different when you're producing someone else's stuff or when you're producing stuff that you are directly involved in?
Producing is, I don't know, it's a weird word. Like, I think producing is like you make something. So when you're making something, it's either you're making it, like with me and James, we kind of both just make stuff. So the producing with me and James is probably more just, all right, we need to move on to this, or rushing stuff through, or making a bunch of decisions about stuff that are not necessarily not always associated with the actual melody or chorus or song. It's just kind of like, all right, we should do this time, we should do that, we should record it this way or that way, or ideas like that. But with other people, it gets the line gets crossed a lot in a lot of different ways. So it just I didn't know what I was doing when I produced somebody else's record. I was like, I make my own. I can help somebody make theirs. And that's basically it. You know, that's the first record I ever did was the Gorillaz, and they wanted me to produce it. I was like, I guess I don't know how to do this, but I didn't know. You know, you just showed up.
It's like, what
never
they produced. Responsibility.
I never worked out of my bedroom.
It comes
before.
Down on Brian to really make sure shit gets done. It's partly what
to an extent it does. It's yeah. That's,
think,
that's
is it moving program. Along or like just kind of like, all right, cool. You did that. Maybe stick with that again.
Yeah. Sometimes kind of people need help that help a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. I learned on the job. I didn't know what I was doing.
You can imagine a lot of bands need that, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
All right. Yeah. Let's try and wake up tomorrow before.
I'm opinionated. You can ask me. I'll tell you. You know, I'm pretty opinionated. So that helps, I think.
Yeah.
But does it get, I mean, how do you figure out the vibe of someone else's energy if you're the higher and higher profile bands you're working with? Yeah, they're, you know, I'm sure they have ideas about stuff and there's probably egos and, you know, so how do you draw the line and where do you compromise or you just go, look, it's this way or don't work with me?
I've been fortunate though. I usually don't go that deep into anything if it doesn't work out pretty quick early on, with tastes and the ability to do that. Cause that kind of stuff keeps me up at night. The idea of, man, there's this one part of the song and it's going to keep on there, be on there, and I want it off and I can't. Like, that would drives me nuts. I can't do it. So luckily I've mostly been able to work with people who want me to like it. So that's a good deal. You know, I want them to like stuff I bring to the table and they want me to like it. So if they don't, then I try something else. And if I don't like what they do, they usually try something else. I've been lucky like that. Bands it's a little bit more complicated, but I mostly have worked with kind of one person usually. You know, Black Keys is two people. Damon was one. James is one. Sparkle Horse one.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff I did was one person at a time. You know, full bands, not so much.
A lot of egos floating around in that situation probably.
Yeah, it can be a little bit political here and there, but I mean, usually it's one-on-one is kind of okay. Because if you don't like somebody and it's just you two, you either keep going or you stop. You either like somebody or you don't, or you know, you get along or you don't. So
with a guy like Beck, where, you know, he kind of like tries to pull off something different every record, when it came to Modern Guilt, was it, he's all, I want to do a bare bones thing, or were you did you go to him saying, why don't we try a bare bones, like, you know, four-piece band for this album?
No, there wasn't a four-piece band. I mean, there wasn't. It was just mainly him and myself, and he did most of the stuff on there.
Oh, really?
Mainly, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there was a couple of times we had some people come in on songs, but for the most part, I tried to get them to play almost everything on there. And
nice.
I did the beats and stuff like that, but for the most part, it was mainly him. And we didn't talk about it. You know, same thing with me and James. You know, we just show up and, I mean, when we do stuff, we just drive to the studio. Like, if we were going to work today, easily, if we had 2 or 3 days off in LA, we don't write anything ahead of time. We don't talk about what we're going to do. It's like, let's go to the studio. It's like, okay, we go here, we come in here, we'd probably take a break immediately.
So it's going
we'd
through
start
a
eating
door
lunch.
Just exhausting.
We get up like, man, we're really doing it.
Right, he's into it. You have to ease into it.
But the first thing we do is like, okay, what are we going to eat? Where are we going to go to eat? Whatever. But eventually we'd settle in, but we just go in the other room and it's not about what kind of song or this or that usually. It's just like, all right, well, I'll start fumbling around on this instrument. He start messing around there until you hear something you like, or we might start listening to some other music, just listening to stuff for, you know, I've been listening to this recently or something like that. But we'll just go, and then by the end of the day, we'll have a song. It doesn't have the lyrics yet usually, but it'll have the structure of it. We'll have melodies, we'll have instrumentation and everything, and then the next day we'll come in and kind of clean it up, see what we liked about what we did the first day, and then usually then we'll put it away and go on to another one. But it's the same thing. You just don't know. We don't really. You're communicating while you're doing it. It's not so planned out or thought out. I mean, that's kind of how we do it, right?
Yeah.
You just kind of don't know.
Yeah, I like that idea because it feels more of a – it's more like a respect the chemistry, you know?
Yeah,
like
it's organic.
Yeah, you is the same – is your process pretty much the same when you're doing Shin's stuff?
No, I sit usually alone and just write with the guitar, you know, and it's – yeah, it's a different thing altogether. It's not as collaborative at all.
Was that a reaction to like coming out of Flake Music?
Yeah. You know, I think that's kind of the reason I started Shins, was so that I could realize a song, you know, on my own and just make sure. It was sort of a control thing, I guess.
Yeah. And then, because the first time I heard Flake Music was when I got the Scare Chaka split. And then, there was this song called Shins. And
yeah.
Then, was that just to have, a connection to the music stuff? Or was that just because that song sounded like what would become the stuff?
It was a little bit of that. Yeah. I had this notion that there could be some other band that would be more melodic and more pop oriented.
Yeah.
And not as stuck in the sort of 90s idea of everything having to be a little bit
lo-fi.
Yeah, either in the 90s, I think things had to either be macho in some certain way, like punk rock in a certain way.
Yeah.
Or they had to be ironic and sort of tongue in cheek.
And not care about any.
And by the end of the 90s, I was really sick of that sort of thing. I was really tired of it.
Well, just so
that was the Shins.
Yeah, yeah. Which was like the whole kind of like, you know, that if you were talking about like a big example of like the Pavement, just like the, oh, whatever. We're not that serious, you know.
Yeah, but you know, they did really cool stuff too. But I just wanted something. Some different direction.
Yeah.
Listen, not to bring it back to Huey Lewis, who was on the cover of this Rolling Stone from 1984, but Brian, before you got here, I was saying I happened to catch three different Huey Lewis songs today, just flipping around SiriusXM. And I just had never really listened to the lyrics of Heart of Rock and Roll before.
Oh, really?
And maybe it's because I'm getting older now, but I found myself out loud agreeing with the lyrics, like, yeah, it's all music, it's rock and roll, it doesn't matter if you go to Cleveland or Sunset Boulevard. Like, I was actually agreeing with Heart of Rock. Like, that is an excellent point. Everyone's doing the same thing, they're just drawing from a different well.
They had to make a song and tell people. You had to explain it to people, I guess.
I guess
it's just they didn't know.
People didn't. I feel like that doesn't happen anymore.
We need to do a song about.
Yeah, rock and roll songs about the concept of rock and roll don't really seem to happen anymore.
It's not easy to do.
There was the Billy Joel song. What was that?
Still rock and roll to me.
There you go.
Yep, yeah. That's right.
Give me some of that rock and roll music.
Yep, that's right. Rock and Roll by Led Zeppelin. I guess
rock and roll.
I guess at that time.
Guys are good.
It is. It totally is. I guess maybe there was still that was still within the kind of the umbra of, oh, rock and roll is still kind of a fresh new thing. And now people are like,
now there's the remains of rock and roll. On our,
just the shattered, just picking through.
Everyone's real sad about it.
I mean, I don't even know how I would, I know what 80s music is and I know what 90s music sounds like. I have no idea what like 2000s music is.
I always thought it was kind of a jip. We got ripped off, man, because the whole 2000s, you can't call it anything. So people just they're just going to ignore it. It's not fair. Like they got people got 60s. You can say 60s. You can say 70s.
You're saying just because 90s. It's hard to sort of.
Yeah. People just go, now it's going to be worse. The teens.
I've heard that.
Yeah, but people would rather just not say it.
Yeah.
I don't think I think they're just not going to say it. Yeah. I mean, you try. Just going to get like, well.
Yeah. Well I remember it was 7 when.
But that was that.
You have to compete with the whole century now. And
that's
not fair.
Well, the 2000s started what you were talking about earlier. It was this like shuffle culture. And so, you know, there weren't. It's like the idea of verticals and people just sort of sticking to those kind of musical verticals it's not really everything's so just mashed up and smashed together that it's not really a thing anymore.
Or at least from this perspective we have right now, it doesn't appear to be a thing. Like when you look back to the 90s, what you consider 90s music, you were saying didn't start until after Nirvana.
No, 91 was still the 80s. 1990, 1991.
Yeah.
92 started to change a little bit, but they were still kind of the 80s. You look at the movies
really,
and stuff.
Like Poison and Madonna. Like there's still a lot of pop.
Right?
Yeah.
And the 60s isn't really something that.
65,
it's
6.
Like 65
is when it really started, right?
What we consider that.
Right.
Yeah. We think of the 60s.
True.
Oh, right. Yeah. I guess up until then.
Yeah.
When
it's still kind of the 50s kind of.
That's right. Yeah. There's still like Beatles. There's still like just these 4-part harmonies.
Yeah.
And then it starts to break down at the more drugs people.
The war.
But the 90s too is kind of split even towards the end where it's, you know, the grunge became pop, and then it just got really aggressive with, you know, the Korn and Limp
Bizkit.
Kicked
in the dick rock.
Yeah. That's great fucking.
The Limp Bizkit.
Yeah. Yeah. Break stuff.
Man, I worked at K-Rock. I did the overnight shift at K-Rock from 95 to 97. It was the best time to be there because it was like you know, was just sort of like riding out that last wave of grunge. And I'm so thankful that I missed, because there was a playlist. You had to play all the songs.
Silver
on the
playlist. Chair.
I liked Silver Chair. I liked Silver Chair.
Candlebox.
No,
just that last
like Candlebox.
Little...
Silver Chair, they were like 17 years old.
Yeah,
like
they were.
They were teenage Australians.
They were grunge handsome.
There's no excuse for Candlebox. but the late, you know, like just kind of missing that, not having to be around music in that late in the late 90s.
It was gross. It was gross. Korn would refuse to tune their bass. That's every time I hear it, it just sounds like a guy that just loosened all the strings and is just kind of hitting at it with a fucking metal pick.
So where do you see, like, do you even think about, you know, do you look at the landscape of what's out there and say, and consciously say, like, oh, there's this hole and it'd be great if we could fill this hole? Or does it really just sort of like you just kind of go with whatever happens in the moment?
You mean when making it or after?
Yeah, or just sort of surveying, like, you know, right before you... I know you say you come in and you just start dicking around until you find something, but you know, in between those periods, do you kind of look at the landscape and go, yeah, it feels like something around this kind of theme would work right now.
Yeah, maybe we should have done that. I don't think...
I wonder if that works, you know, for anybody.
Maybe. I mean, I think it can happen accidentally. I think with the Black Keys, there was a whole... There wasn't any rock bands really that... Well, I'm not talking crap about other rock bands or anything like that, but it sounded almost like classic rock music, but it was done in a modern way, but it just had a thing to it. But there... Apparently, there's not that much of it now. It's just not. There's a lot of hip hop music's really big, dance music's really big, and all those other things. But there's not a lot of rock and roll bands that do something that's simple. And that obviously plugged a huge hole. But I don't think they were thinking about that when they started. You know, 10 to 12 years ago,
they've been doing it for so long.
Right, but it happened that the hole came along. They didn't. They didn't. It just it happened while they did it.
Like, you know, the White Stripes tapered off, and then someone needed some, you know, loud guitar rock and. They were just kind of the, you know, just so happened there were two pieces as well. But, you know, like all that stuff was still happening. Like, you know, the Jay Reitard, all the kind of garagey stuff that was happening. And then just one of those things that, you know, oh, no, it's your turn. You go up there. You guys can handle it. It'll be all right.
But, yeah, I don't think that people, I don't know. I don't think people think about that as much as it finds them. You know, I think that's what I think for us, it'll find it. But if it does, but I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's very similar what we do to anything, but I think most people probably feel that way. To be honest, like when they think they're doing their own stuff, they're like, "No, this is super unique.
No,
it sounds like nothing. It sounds like everything."
Yeah, I was
going
to say that earlier,
but I don't know.
Like you guys just have it's like a Broken Bell sound. There's, you know, I wouldn't be able to put it in anything as far as like it's like, oh, that just sounds like Broken Bells.
Yeah,
you know, and which is a great way to be, I think, in a band.
Yeah, the sort of the analogous thing in comedy is that someone has such an original voice that you cannot picture anyone else doing their material, or you're like, oh, those jokes are unstealable because there's so much about who that person is.
Yeah.
That makes it funny.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they're so tied to that person as opposed to just, oh, that person's saying funny things.
Yeah.
It's like
Louis Anderson.
Yeah. Like, like Louis Anderson.
Kevin Meaney.
Kevin Meaney.
No one else can talk about pants.
Pants, people.
Yeah, pants.
Oh, I heard a story that Kevin Meaney did a show and he came backstage and got really pissed off about something, and it just sort of shattered my image of like, he's the fun-loving, bow-tie-wearing guy.
Yeah, he's a meanie.
Fuck you for that joke.
Yeah, true. I didn't want to.
Did you follow a lot of comedy? That's so, like, Kevin Meaney's not a pull that most people would just immediately have. Like,
right? But he's that sort of comedian. You know?
Yeah.
Are you friends with comics? I mean, it's like, it feels like there's a,
yeah, I've got a couple of friends.
Yeah,
I live,
you are actually, you do have a few
friends. Yeah.
It just sort of feels like there's something.
Bunch of jerks.
Sort of oh, you guys did the, my friend, some friends of mine at Soapbox did the Ghost Inside video with Christina Hendricks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we were doing, I was shooting some stuff there, like right as they were taking the set down, like the space pod.
Yeah. That was a really low budget video compared to what people thought. It's funny, like Jacob Gentry, who did the video, I've known him for a long time since college, and he has a way of, he can make things look so good with nothing really. And so we didn't have a lot of money for it, because it was the second video. So we did something, and the way he made it look, it's like, I think it kind of got taken the wrong way. It was like he used old technology to do it, like the way they did Star Wars, he used models, everything else. He did it all the certain way, really low budget for the most part, and it was way cheaper than the video that we did before, which is basically me and James walking down the street at night. And then this one's like all in space and everything, and it costs less than half the money for it. But then
you're saying people thought it was expensive.
Yeah, people thought it was expensive. I think people might have even looked negatively, like, what? I mean, it's just
it's like $1 million video.
Yeah,
who would spend the money in this day and age?
It was really cheap.
These guys are totally sold out. They made their space video.
The set was it was like half the size of this room. It was really small.
It was styrofoam.
Yeah.
But it also should illustrate, like, this is why CG is ruining so much of film. You know, like, if you just made some cool models and, you know, like, did stuff practically, then it would actually look
still
cool. There's some hilarious stuff on cable. I don't have cable at home, so when I'm at Brian's, I kind of indulge. And they've got these ridiculous shows, like sort of docu shows, and they'll just green screen somebody sitting in an office. Like, the whole idea is just dramatization of a dude sitting in an office. The whole thing will be CGI.
Yeah,
they're like, why couldn't they just get a desk and a chair? Yeah. It's ridiculous.
I'm sure they work in offices. Just bring a camera there.
Right. Yeah. Weird.
No, they have to bring two lights.
Oh, ooh.
And then that's it. Really. Yeah.
Then they got to find a thing to put their phone on to film it.
But I think, you know, I sort of, do you see kind of some of the same parallels in music where it's, you know, people are so up the ass of technology that it's sort of ruining, like, kind of the soul of what should be happening, which is like technology makes you less creative because you don't have to necessarily be as creative if you can solve every problem that you have technologically in a second.
I don't know. I talked to James about this before. Like, you know, I don't think I would have been able to do music or would have even tried to do music if the technology hadn't made it easy to do. I didn't really play instruments when I was younger. I was in college already, and wanted to make films, but the filmmaking stuff looked so bad, and you didn't sound like, didn't look like the real thing. You know, it was just the beginning of DV and stuff, like mini DV and things like that. But the music stuff, actually, the digital way of recording at in your room basically was close. Like, you could fake it. You could act like you were a real band or like a real musician. And so I don't think I would have done it if it wasn't that way, if I wasn't able to cut corners and fudge ways and to get it into to sound like the real thing. You're just copying basically the things that you like, the albums you like. So that's all. I mean, it helped me a lot. I definitely wouldn't have done it that way any other way, I don't think. And I still use it, and I still do it in that way. And you have to be creative still, even in that, because anybody can have that same technology, that same thing, and they're just going to make different stuff. Because I remember thinking after a couple of years of doing music that I was doing something cool, and then I think it was like my brother-in-law or something, he's really into music too, just like music, but just like, hey man, I got this program, I made these beats, and I heard him and I was like, man, you did that in like 2 or 3 days, and it's kind of exposing. I'm like, I've been doing this for a couple of years and this sound, his stuff's, you know, something I made to the average person still sounded legitimate. And I'm like, you start to get worried almost, like, no, you shouldn't have that. That's not cool.
You shouldn't
like,
have Fruity Loops.
You should wait a couple of years, then you can maybe do something. But it's you can't hide the fact that anybody can do stuff. It's just you have to be that much more unique or creative about what you're doing.
Yeah.
And so it's always going
to
be that thing where somebody can
write a really good song.
Yeah.
And so those beats, I mean, cool. You know, it makes it easier, but it makes it easier for everybody. So then you're just in an ocean of, you know,
but the good shit will always, you know, anyone can pick up a guitar, but it's the people that are going to work on it and try to do something better or different with it that'll end up, you know, the good shit will rise to the top.
Yeah.
Well, it's finding I think it's just finding your voice or whatever that is. I don't watch American Idol, but I saw one clip and something Harry Connick Jr. said made me, my heart wept with joy that someone finally said this, but he basically called them out. You know all that annoying soul yodeling shit that American Idol made popular, like, verbal Olympic stuff. And then
all the notes.
And then all the notes. And so, you know, everyone thinks like, oh, that's so great, that's so there's a clip where a girl does that and Jennifer Lopez is just like, oh, that's so amazing. And then Harry Connick Jr., who's a like ridiculously trained, I mean, like music since he was a tiny, tiny boy.
Yeah.
He just, he explains the pentatonic scale to her, and he's like, well, it's actually really not that impressive. I mean, that's just... And then she's like, no, you don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, no, I really feel like I know what I'm talking about. But I've never heard someone publicly, especially like on that show, call out like, yeah, that's just a lot of bullshit. That's really not that. That's really not that hard to do.
Well, when we talked to Ben Folds, he was talking about how he was getting so irritated with people just trying to do all the notes that, like, when he started doing Ben Folds 5, it's like he was going to just like do real static, just one note kind of singing with each thing instead of trying to.
So, do you ever kind of go through? there's that thing that Coco Chanel said, which I think applies to a lot of things, where she says like right before you leave the house, you look at yourself in the mirror and you take off one thing. So basically just like simplify. Like when you listen to something.
I like that this is the analogy for this.
I don't know why I thought of that.
He's always quoting Coco Chanel.
I use the fashion thing as well though.
She was a visionary. But I, you know, just sort of looking to other disciplines for kind of like philosophical tenets, I think is kind of a cool thing to do.
Yeah.
And so do you look at that, you know, like when you do a song, you go, oh, I should just strip that one thing out. Do you try to strip it down to its simplest form?
It probably should more, you know.
I don't know if we think about it that much. It's like, does it sound cool or not? Or, you know, is something about it annoying you or
sometimes,
not?
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, it's definitely have a habit of layering. I know I do. That's usually a technique used by people who can't actually play. So so that's something I've developed over the years. I'm really good at layering now. And so, yeah, that's the first thing you do is layer a whole bunch of stuff. And then sometimes you can go, okay, take this off or that off. But it is almost, yeah, I think it is better usually to just take something away than to add something. I agree.
How do you know when it's done?
February 4th.
are you good at letting, I mean, like you said, you don't, you know, like once it's out, you don't really listen to it anymore, but emotionally, are you good at sort of going, oh, that song's done. Nah, I'm going to just kind of move on to this next thing.
I mean, I am, but I don't know. I mean, yeah, I am, but I'm not the one singing on the song, so it's a lot easier for me. I'm mostly judging it. So as long as I like it, I'm good. I don't have to worry about most of the other
things.
I
second guess more than Brian does songs. I'll be throwing Brian ideas like 2 weeks after we thought we were done.
Yeah, but sometimes it's valid, but it takes me a while to get my head around that sometimes, because I do have to put myself in a place where I'm like, that's done. I have to kind of move past it. And I'm constantly having to do that, but I'm not always right about it. But it's a habit that I do as well. So, but a couple of times, or more than a couple of times, James has done that. Like, we really should look at this. We really should look at this. And then it saved songs before, where it's like, I can't believe we almost put that out without doing that. You know, so it does work.
Well, both of you guys have done really innovative things. And do you ever think about it? Does that ever trip you out at night when you're just kind of lying in bed and like, oh, I've done all this stuff and it's been doing well, and I guess I'm doing something right. How do I keep doing that? Or do you even think about it in those terms? Do you ever step outside and look back, or are you just kind of a head down, like just push forward, move forward kind of a thing?
I mean, you've done the innovative stuff, I think.
With people, not, you know.
You're the one.
I mean, well, as far as, you know, just strange ways of putting out music and
I mean,
stuff
if
like
you
that.
Ask the average person, I mean, not that I consider it a job, but if you ask the average person who goes to work a whole lot, if he just will show up one day and go, you know, I think I've done this. I think I won. You just you're not going to just like go turn around, just like leave your, here's my keys, here's my stuff. Like, I think I've done this really well. Yeah. And nobody has anything on me. I'm good.
Yeah, that last report.
It's not really the way you kind of, your mind really works. You don't start looking at it like.
If I feel anxious about, you know, I don't know what's coming next and what am I going to do? What if, you know, if things go bad or whatever, anxiety, which happens sometimes, right? I just sit down and start writing because I know it's the only thing I know that I can do in the meantime that, you know, could end up being good. So I do kind of just go back into the salt mine, you know, and just work it out.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's a tough question to answer, and I know it's probably kind of annoying to talk about the process because it's sort of – it just is a very natural thing that you guys do without probably thinking about it too much. But the reason that I ask is because I know a lot of people who listen want to do the same kind of thing or similar stuff, you know, maybe in other fields. And, you know, I constantly try to remind people like you're your biggest obstacle. So it's always fun to hear people who have figured out how to push through themselves and kind of get their own brains out of the way, how they do that and what is, you know, like when you kind of come up against the wall, how do you push through that?
It's, I mean, you described it pretty well. I mean, I don't know that there's a secret except for knowing that, like what you just said, which is, you know, you're running the race, you know, with yourself. There's nobody really next to you. And most people don't even know that they can do it. You know,
I just keep working. And if I'm having a hard time figuring something out, I move on to something different. And I just keep doing that.
Just keep moving, though, I think, is the main thing.
Something pops out. I mean, at least when I'm sitting and writing alone, you know, things kind of happen unconsciously. It's like when you finally stop paying attention that something cool happens, you know?
Accidents are usually way better than anything you plan to do.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
But if you're not doing anything, then neither one of those is going to happen. I think
you need to be able to recognize a good accident. That's, I think, something maybe that not everybody does.
That's why I think collaboration is so great, because you don't recognize your own accents a lot of the time.
True. Yeah.
So to have someone else to go, oh, that thing, there was something there. What? Yeah. I was? Yeah. Sometimes things are too close to your own soul where you just don't, where you go, oh, that's not interesting. And someone else goes, no, that's the thing.
But that's just Brian is doing that often. He's really good at that, I'd say. That is a key.
Sort of having an eye for a talent or an eye for a thing. Is there any specific thing you look for when you sit down and when you first start collaborating with someone? Do you go, well, let's just start fucking around and kind of, and I'll just sort of figure out where your brain is at?
Not so much. I mean, usually I've heard the person's stuff a lot and I've been able to feel a certain way from hearing something. But I mean, I in a studio, I trust my instincts 100%. Not, you know, again, for better or for worse, I genuinely just think, oh, if I feel something, then it's real. So we're keeping that, or it's what's based around that. But I do that all the time. I've seen it with people who I've seen over the years now, and I haven't really had to go outside of that. And I think you can do that and it'll either work out or it won't, but it's really hard to do it if you don't really have a strong opinion and go with what you think, whether other people really agree or not. And, you know, they'll make you kind of unpopular sometimes or whatever, but it's really just that. Like, if I hear somebody doing something and they're like, yeah, but I've done that a bunch of times before, it's like, well, that's why I'm here, you know, do it again. Or, you know, well, so-and-so did that. It's like, see, now we're starting to go down a path that I can't really, that's not something I do. I've never really been, I mean, we talk about this, me and James, like part of any kind of, I guess, movement or crew or genre of music that's, you know, that's kind of come and gone or whatever. We've never really been cool, like the cool hip thing that's going on. And so I think a lot of that is we fall in line with that when we work together, is that stuff never comes up really about like what other people are doing or what's cool right now or what's happening with this or that. It never changes like what we do at all. It just doesn't. Like listening to his, you know, the Shins records, and even I think the stuff I do in that way, it just, I can't, because, you know, it's always like there's the cool kids table and there's everyone else. And I was never on that cool kids table then. So I'm not going to try to act like I can, even if I get a pass, I'm not going to go, you know, do that. It's just, I'll get found out immediately. It's just, there's no way. So we don't even try in that way.
But I think having that, were you always sort of comfortable in that sense of just saying, because the thing that you said about, oh, if I feel something, it's probably real. Most people don't know how to identify that. Like usually you sort of work until you get enough experience where you start figuring out how to calibrate. Oh, okay. I guess if I feel in this quadrant of my brain, then this is probably means that. Did you always feel that way, or did you sort of get that just because you've been doing this for a long time?
No, I think when you're listening to music, you know, if you get an album, you're listening to the record, song four comes on, you listen to the rest of the record, you're like, song four is the one, you know, for me, or that did this, you know. And then eventually after five more times you listen, song eight becomes the one. But that really happened, you know, that four was the one that did this thing, or that part really happened. And you listen to enough music, that's, as a fan, you start to develop your own taste and you develop things, and that's how those things mean to you. So then you start talking to somebody else and they go, track four, same thing with me. like, oh, okay, well, there's the connection there. There's something that, and then like, what about this album? Oh yeah, 7 and 8, or, you know, this song or that song. And you start to have a little bit of those things that start to, you know, you can get the context of, okay, well, what I think is actually not crazy. I was onto something. Like, I should have never really questioned. I knew that they were great. I should speak up, you know, the more people you know, and somebody else says, no, it's 4. You're like, no, this guy's crazy. And then, you know, and you really think that, then you're like, okay, well, there's conviction there somewhere. You know, even if everybody else is wrong, you're still going to feel like, okay, there's something here. So you just, you know, you'll find out after a while, I guess, if your tastes are shared or not.
Well, I think it's hard to, I think the one thing that a lot of people lack is this sort of like, there's an awareness factor of like, is this working or not? Which I think is a very important thing to be able to have. Because sometimes you can get so married to an idea that you don't want to listen to what anyone else, they're like, no, it's this thing. And then after a while you go, oh, I'm dumb. I was dumb this whole time. Why was I so stubborn? Because you just get so locked into being right about things.
I can't work alone. That's why whenever I try, I get that way a little bit, I think. I think that's why I like to work with other people so much. Because I start, as soon as I go in myself and start trying to do the same things I do with other people, I curse at myself so much, and I'm terrible. I can't do any of this. I can't decide on anything. I can't judge anything because it's too close to me. So I found that out a long time ago. So I was like, well, I'm not going to even, I'll go to this other thing, which is working with other people. And that seems to work out because I'm a fan, is, you know, a lot about what, you know, I hear stuff and I react to it. And I've learned to make things as well, usually in the process of working with other people or ripping off stuff that I really liked. I've learned to do it, but it's still, I think I'm better at working with other people than just, you know, by myself.
Is there any piece of a song that was inspired by something that no one has caught on to that in your mind you're like, oh, this, to me, this totally feels like this other thing that I was inspired by, but no one has picked up on it?
Like any one thing?
Yeah, like, or
it's like, does that happen once? Does it happen on a ton? Oh, it happens all the time. I'm not going to tell you, but yeah, it happens all the time.
Yeah.
James, do you, at this point, you probably have a pretty clear idea of like what the Shins boxes are and what the Broken Bell, like if you get an idea, if you start to feel something, go, oh, and that's more Shins, or this is more Broken Bells. Is there like a third and fourth and fifth box where you go, I have this idea, but it doesn't contextually, I just don't know where to fit it into anything.
Yeah, there is. The thing about the Broken Bell stuff is I work on that stuff when I'm with Brian. We just work together in the studio. So it really is that. I don't sit at home and come up with ideas and then go, oh, that's a Broken Bells thing. Anything like that, I'm usually things end up being a Shins idea, I guess. There are other things, other ideas, though, that are maybe a little bit more, I don't know, sort of like rock and roll and maybe punk-ish that I come up with. So I have kind of a file where shit like that goes for some project one day, maybe.
Something really angry.
No, it's just like more, it's just more kitschy. Okay. in sort of a fun punk sort of way. Yeah. I find myself sometimes getting in that mood and I'll write that way for a while. But so I'm not going to put that on a Shins record probably, you know?
But do you ever think like, oh, someday I'll put, or is that stuff just kind of personal just for you?
No, I do. I think about it. Like, what am I going to do with this stuff? I like it. You know, it'd be fun to do that, I think. But I just, you know, it just right now goes into the pile of random shit.
Is there anything that you feel like, I still want to do X, or I still, you know, there's this kind of area of my brain that I still want to explore that I just haven't hit yet?
No, I'm not that sort of thinker. I'm pretty much pretty satisfied with what I'm doing. I'm not like thinking about writing a novel or some weird thing like that now.
No,
like that. Yeah.
If you kind of go through periods where you feel like, nah, I just don't really have anything to say, do you give in to
that? Shut up.
You just shut up. Well, you know, some people like, oh, I'll go to Italy for a month and just kind of like recharge, or I'll just go sit by myself in a cabin. Or
I'm totally, maybe I'm just not artistic in that sort of way, or that's not how my brain works. I don't know. If I were to go somewhere to write, if I was, I'm going to lock myself in a cabin in Alaska, I think I would just feel all this pressure. Yeah. I'm here. I've got to do this. Yeah. It's got to be fucking awesome when I get out of here, or I'm a failure. I don't know.
It'll take all the fun out of creating.
Yeah, I think I'm just – maybe it's just sort of the family I come from. We're just much more pragmatic and boring.
No, but it just it's – you know, I think there's a – if you come from a family of, you know, like what does your dad do?
He was in the Air Force, career Air Force guy.
Okay, so he pretty much was like a get shit done kind of guy.
Yeah, oh, totally. Yep.
You figure it out. You just fucking if you
yeah,
you get up,
absolutely.
You get up in the day, and it's like whatever the thing is, you just got to fucking figure it out.
And he grew up on a cattle ranch. He's not. It's just practical people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Which I think, you know, I think some people have this sort of artistic idea of like, no man, it's sort of like. You know, I mean, everyone's a little bit different, but I think we found that some of our more successful comedian friends are the ones who, like, I'm going to go write from 9 to 6 and just, you know, like, it's a job, and whatever comes out that day, a lot of it's going to be shit, but some nuggets will be useful, and I'll just kind of go
and
from there.
You can build on those. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I do too. I especially if you can choose to work that way. A lot of times, you know, you have to have a job to create stuff. Like, that's not the creating part. You have to just have a regular job so you can generally live, you know, somewhat comfortably. And then in the off hours, you use that time to create. And sometimes that's really good for some people. And then sometimes when they turn that into that being the job, they're not very good at it. You know, you just can't come up with anything. It's like the pressure you're talking about going to Alaska. It's like, okay, you don't have to work a job anymore. You can just focus on this creative thing. So people just doesn't work well that way. But I like the idea of just getting up. That's what we do when we do the records. We get up, we come straight to the studio, we have a time, we work reasonable hours, like usually like noon to 7 or 8, but every day, 5 days a week, we take the weekends off. It's just we do it like that way, whether we have – some days we don't really come up with stuff, but most of the time we do, but you just kind of get there and just do it. Sometimes, all right, we're going to make this really – up tempo song, it's gonna be cool, it's gonna be a big song for us, and then at the end it's the saddest, slowest thing. It's like how the hell did this happen? And it's like, and it winds up being that way. We've done that many times where we're listening to a certain kind of music whatsoever, and make this turn, that turn, and then it's just, this has no chance of commercial success, but you know, that's just kind of what we do. It winds up getting there no matter what, I guess.
I think that's the sort of mythos idea of, you know, just this artist, and he just like ideas just come to him. I think the more successful people I talk to, the more consistently it's, oh yeah, it's really a lot less romantic than you think it is. You just fucking work at it, and then hopefully you're lucky enough to pull out the right nuggets. And if not, then you try some new shit. And if not, then you try new shit and try to learn from it. It doesn't really. You know, most people kind of put up these barriers of like, I don't know, I'm just waiting for something to happen. It's like, no, you really kind of have to start the machine before it's going to spit anything out.
Oh, yeah, that's...
And keep at it, you know, because I think partly you build this library of ideas, and if you let it go too long, then that it just kind of dissipates.
Mm-hmm.
So that if you keep at it, the better ideas are more likely to come up.
Yeah, it's like a you know, factory line where you have to get the stuff out of the way so the other stuff can continue to come out. You just got to keep it going, keep it moving.
Yeah, and especially like a lot of ideas that you have in one moment are not necessarily going to work if you hold on to it too long because they were just too of that time.
Yeah.
Especially who you were or where the rest of the world was. Yeah. And so
I've got tapes, little like micro cassette tapes going back to the early 90s, and it's pretty hilarious sometimes to listen to that shit.
Oh, that's my nightmare if anybody of my phone something happened, hearing my voice recordings of ideas.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh yeah, I'd rather a sex tape come out, seriously.
I'm dead serious.
I'm not kidding. Like it's career ending. If you heard this,
if he could do this, then
I really, 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 really bad. Like I'll go back and listen. Like, what is that?
He's fucked a lot of weird things. Yeah. And it's okay if that gets out. But it is that like you know, you're not any more exposed than if someone like my comedy notebook, I often wonder, like, if I was walking down the street with my bag and someone's like, he pulls a gun, they go, give me your bag. I honestly would be like, can I just take my notebook out of there?
Yeah.
And then you can take the rest of the shit that I can replace.
Yeah. Is there any way you can seriously edit out what I just said? Because I don't want anybody like
not trying to hack into your...
I'm being dead serious now. Like, I'm really scared.
Yeah. Oh, to your phone.
Because when you say something like that and it's any kind of joke, it's like, wait a minute. That
could be actually pretty interesting.
Yeah, I just made it pretty big deal. Not that I think people are really going to
I don't think what you said is so, like...
It'll get looked over. I just started thinking. Because now that I've said that, it's sinking in that... What if it really did happen?
Yeah,
I need to. I need to get them off my phone. That's what I need to do. We can leave it in. Yeah. You can leave it in. I just need to get these things off my phone.
So this
shouldn't carry
phone?
Around.
Yeah, once you put them on,
you carry around kryptonite in my pocket with me. It's way too silly. I should. Yeah. Right.
This should be motivating to get all that shit off your phone.
Thank you. Intervention.
This is what this whole thing is for. This isn't even recording.
Okay.
Do you have an iPhone?
No comment.
Okay. Well, if you did have an iPhone. If you did have an iPhone, there's a great app called iExplorer, and it basically just pulls all the shit off your phone like it was a hard drive.
Yeah.
So it's you know, I'm not that you have that kind of phone. I'm sure you're rocking the Motorola, the Star
Razor.
Tag.
The Razor.
Yeah, exactly. You could fit 99 songs on that thing.
Oh, yeah. And spent $800 on that.
Yeah, exactly.
God damn it. The Razor. I liked the StarTAC phone. I really like the StarTAC phone.
I love the Razor.
That was the one that was designed after like the Star Trek communicator. So it just like popped open.
Yeah.
That was the vision of the future that we had. So what's next after February 4th? Then what happens? Are you go back and start doing more Shin stuff, or do you tour? Do you guys tour together?
We're going to tour.
Yeah, we're touring. We're rehearsing now for the tour, so we'll start touring, and that's going to take us into the summer, I think, for the most part.
Festivals.
Do you go out with a band, or is it just the two of you?
We have two more guys that come with us. Cool. So it's a band. It's four of us. Yeah.
Are you doing live stuff?
Yeah.
You doing Coachella?
We are.
Looking forward to any of the reunions going on at Coachella this year?
Yeah, Outkast. I mean, luckily we're playing the same day as them, so we'll get to see that.
That's nice. What else is happening?
Neutral Milk Hotel.
Okay.
Yeah. They're on tour now, I think, right?
Yeah, I think they're doing theaters right now.
Yeah. That should be good. I mean, we're only going to get, I think we'll probably only get to be there on the one day, and then we'll be, you know, shuttled out somewhere else, and then we'll be back the next weekend, I think.
Yeah. Is the touring part kind of anticlimactic because you've pretty much done all of the work up to that point, and now it's just like, oh, here's all the shit we've been working on for a while. Like, here it is.
Not really. I mean, playing live shows is pretty intense, you know. So and it can be really fun, and
especially when they cheer and love you, it's kind of, you forget that's
filled
that's a good
the
part,
hole.
But, yeah.
Terrible. Well, it is. It's such a
every
it's,
night.
It's yeah. such an. It's such an. Like the idea of it still bends my brain a little bit to think like you can just sit in a room and fuck around and just make a thing and then just place that thing somewhere and then thousands of people will show up. And then all of a sudden, it's like it's out of you. It's out of your body.
Do that thing again. Yeah.
How do you sort of like, how many shows does it take for you to get when you're playing live before you start to realize like, oh, people are responding to this? Like, because they're obviously going to respond to things that you don't necessarily think of. They're going to catch things. They're going to catch a hook or a word
like
or
Mirren Fields.
Right. So how do you know, like, how long does it take you guys to kind of like get in sync with like what an audience, like what the ebbs and flows are?
It shouldn't take us long. I think after the first week or so, we're playing the same size venues. After the first week, we'll start to know what songs are and what parts are connecting the most, I think. I think so, anyway. The patterns will form.
What do you do, you know, because it's not like we have a bunch of records to switch things out or anything.
But it's much better than last time. Last time we had one album. It was 10 songs. It was 38 minutes. And we had like, oh, you have an hour set.
That's when you have to jam. Just have to stretch it out and jam.
All right.
Do you talk to the crowd at all, or do you just kind of get down?
I'm not much of a talker with the crowd, but
minimal. Yeah. I don't say anything, but ever. I don't think
I'm okay with that. Usually, when I'm seeing a band, you know,
yeah.
When I was in bands growing up, there was this one band I was in where the guy was a real political guy, and it'd be 5 minutes between songs, or I was just sitting behind my drum set waiting for this guy to tell everybody about, you know, animal cruelty, and I go, "Can we start? Start the song now?" Like, and people would just be getting bored. Like, no one wants to hear that. They're there.
Bob Barker, you done up there?
Yeah, exactly.
No, but I think it depends on where it's coming from. Like, some people can do that in a very natural, and it feels good. Like, oh, this is part of the show.
Yeah.
And other people just sort of feel like, I have to say something, or I have to be funny.
How many of you like the taste of alcohol?
you guys pull that, like, we're going to fuck your girlfriends. Yeah, yeah. Like old Van Halen style.
Yeah, that's more my style.
Man, put the left side
I'll
of the
fuck who's your girlfriend, pal.
Yeah, yeah. Just right.
Broken Bell show. Not what I thought it was going to be. James Mercer fucked everyone's girlfriend. Like, dude, they only had 38 minutes, so he had to spend 22 minutes doing something else.
What a weird threat.
Yeah.
But I wonder if it would have been awesome. I mean, obviously it would have been awesome to have had that experience, but now I think about, I wonder if like Diamond Dave just sort of sits back and he's like, oh man, I wish I was doing that still.
Oh, like relive glory days?
I mean, that was to be
that's a sad sight.
To be where those guys were, like in that period of time, in that place in music, like I just can't even.
They reveled in it.
Yeah, too. You know what? You know, watch. There's a Sunset Strip documentary on Netflix right now, and it's real interesting. And then they get to the metal hair like years, like just the glam metal stuff on the Sunset Strip, and then talking to all the guys from that time now. That's real sad. Then you can get, you see it right up there. The guy's like, it was great, man. There's just like, you get your dick sucked everywhere. It was like Jonesy from Senseless. I just roll up on my bike and get my cock sucked. It was just like, they loved it so much.
Jonesy still does.
Yeah, but 100 pounds more.
I got to see this.
Yeah, it's really great. It's like starts from the very, like how it was just farms, and it goes to this spot where it just, you're like, ugh. And then there's awesome like old shot of the, like, these two punk kids going, what the fuck? What happened here? It's just a bunch of hair metal. What's going on? All these guys going, yeah, it only lasted 4 years.
I know. Well, there's this great, you see a lot of those old interviews where they're interviewing Rat.
Oh, know. Chris Holmes?
Yeah. And they're talking about hair metal. They go like, well, you know, which other bands do you think you guys are in competition with? And they're like, oh man, we're not in competition with these guys. Like, you know, our competition are the super bands like the Stones and Zeppelin. I think it was Behind the Music, and then it kind of is so sad. It cuts like 5 years later, and one of the guys like hanging billboards on Sunset Boulevard, yeah, like right over where they used to perform.
Cool.
I feel like what every industry has now is that I feel like, you know, artists are a lot more empowered than they used to be and not necessarily as controlled by, you know, bigger things, you know, saying, oh, now it's grunge time, fuck you hair metal guys. Yeah. Like, you guys, you know, like you said, you know, it's not really any kind of specific thing that you're a part of, so you could just go make another record if you want to, and if put hair and give it directly record to people, and if they like it, great.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess you could.
It does seem like there's not as cohesive of a trend, or sort of the trends aren't so strong as they were back then.
Yeah, I sort of feel like it's, you know, I feel like in those days it seemed like if a company decided that a band was over, like, oh, well, they didn't sell a million whatever, so now they're done, then they were really fucking done. But now it feels like, well, if, you know, if you just want to keep, it's only
put
done
it out
when
yourself,
you're,
then.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's
right.
Only
yeah.
done if you decide you don't want to do it anymore.
I do wonder, too, if with all the way everything can be so easily documented and spread so quickly, if people are a little bit more in the middle as opposed to really committing to any trends because you don't want to look like a jackass.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Are people really a little bit more hesitant to
because
to,
everyone's
to get
more
really,
self-conscious?
Yeah, and to be and you can see how quickly things can change, and do you really want to wear that makeup and that hairstyle and that thing? Do you really want to do that right now?
Yeah,
and because it's going to get it's going to be out there. It's going to be on Facebook. It's going to be all these places are going to see it.
So we're just basically a culture of second guessing right now. Like, I don't know.
I'm asking the question. I don't know. I haven't really noticed it myself, but I do wonder if that's part of the thing too, with where, because people used to socially a lot more, I think they socially define themselves with their music that they listened to, and then it affected the way they dressed and talked and all these other things. I don't know that that's necessarily, maybe I'm just getting older, I'm out of touch. Maybe it does happen in high schools. I'm just not around it, but I'm just asking more. I don't know if anybody notices
either.
That.
I don't know either. And I think a lot of times you just need hindsight to look back and go, oh, that was a thing. Mm-hmm. That was a thing. We didn't see it at the time because it was just a part. It was too close to us. But I guess that was a thing.
Everyone was wearing this
bow ties.
Yeah, exactly.
Now it's all bow ties.
Bow ties, suspenders.
But we just that's an hour. That was an hour. which is about all that. Well, that's okay.
Oh, cut. Oh, everything's ruined now. God damn it. Turn the cameras off. Oh, wait. Why can't you find the thing? It's right.
Poor guy.
Can someone show him? It's Back to the Future 2. It's right there. Second shelf.
Is Back to the Future 2 over there?
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, my God. You guys have The Incredibles? You have E.T.?
Oh, you got Celebrity?
Donnie Darko? Breathless? All right. Thanks for letting us take up an hour of your day.
No, it was cool.
It was fun.
I didn't know what this was. Now I do.
Yeah. And, do you want to go back and start over then?
I didn't realize we were doing an interview until about 10 minutes in.
Yeah.
I just thought we all liked holding microphones.
Yeah.
Some guys just showed up and they just started talking to us on a couch.
Yeah. And they so faded away.
It would be cool though if you just walked in a room, there's an extra microphone, you sit down and just join the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, that would be kind of fun.
That's what
I just did.
Yeah.
If it was a high traffic, you know, like if it was like one of the, if there was a big studio and a bunch of bands recording, you just put something in the middle and just let people come in. It's like, oh, Bono just came in and said a few things and then he walked out.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, it would always be the most annoying people in the whole studio.
Yeah.
Always wanting.
Oh, they won't leave. They won't stop talking.
Bono won't leave. We've been recording for 4 hours.
But it was really nice chat with you guys. And thanks for having us. And if it's okay, I just want to take a minute and look at all the weird stuff, the cool retro stuff here. Does that jukebox work?
Yeah, it does. This was a real 80s studio and I liked it, so I tried to keep it 80s when I tried to mess around.
Did you curate
it.
All the records in there?
Bought a bunch of 45s.
And who printed out the little labels? They look
Todd did. They have programs on the computer that can make it look old.
Really? Oh, that's rad.
Yeah, that fit.
Was that LaserJet?
Yeah. It was a dot matrix printer.
I always rip off, try to take the dots off the side.
Super loud.
Were these already here, all these gold and platinums?
Well, as you can see, me and my opinionated self, there was a whole other wall full of them, and I those would embarrass
that's
me.
Right.
Those are not records I'd be proud to have on the wall. They're not mine. None of mine.
That looks like fucking. That looks like Pompeii or something, yeah, where they just these things were just flash frozen.
Out of all those, we got Tony Basil up here.
Tony Basil recorded here. Did she record Mickey here?
She did. Apparently,
Crowded House.
Shit! What? Where's Crowded House?
Where did I see it?
Yeah, this crowd.
The La Bamba soundtrack.
House, right? Yeah. Oh, Dead Man's Party. Hey, Ungo Bungo, Chris.
They fucking recorded Crowded House here. Oh, I mean, Neil Finn's one of my favorites.
Yeah, so those are the ones I kept, and those are the other probably 50 spaces that are empty that are in storage somewhere.
Yeah.
I think we bummed out the studio people. They're like, you don't want these there? I was like, no, I don't really want those there.
The gold cassette and the platinum cassette.
Do you remember what any of them were?
I don't. No. Yeah,
just like enough to be like, I don't care.
I think Linda Ronstadt recorded a lot of records here because it was probably about 10. I think she just always recorded here, so I kept one.
My office used to be at the Henson Studio.
Oh yeah,
which is right, and so that was old A&M Records, mm-hmm. and they kept the recording studios inside. We shot the Ben Folds video.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
They kept the recording studio intact, and so it looks exactly like it did when they, you know, like, cool. you know, I think Carole King recorded there and David Lee Roth.
Yeah.
So there's a table in the back where the viewing couch was, where you could watch the artist perform. And the table has like about 10,000 slash marks on it. And they were like, yeah, this is where they would like do
razor
all the
blades.
Coke. And so they never changed the table. So it's almost like a historical. Some of the most famous people in music like drag their faces across that table.
I can only imagine the studio. Seriously though, this was a very 80s.
Yeah, Sheena Easton these
things alone.
Prince produce that album? I think Prince produced that album.
Really?
Maybe. I think he did.
I was in love with Sheena Easton as a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we all were.
I had a huge crush on Sheila E.
Prince had her too. God damn it. Is there anyone Prince hasn't been in?
He's married now, isn't he?
What?
Yeah. Or he's married.
I don't know. All I know is that a bunch of people camp out in front of his house in Minnesota and they just hope that he comes out and plays, and he never does. But a whole bunch of people, because one time he came out and played.
Oh, wow.
And so now people just camp.
Now he's cursed.
Yeah, forever.
Yeah.
It was like, God damn it, the one time. I did that one time.
Awesome.
Well, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Take a seat, rest your weary bones. safe in my hands. Tell me about the years and let me buy an hour. Maybe get me to understand. Ooh, ain't nobody calling, ain't nobody home. What a lovely day to be lonely. You're holding on the line, holding on the life, yeah. Holding on the love, ooh, holding on the life, holding on the life, yeah. Holding on the love,
Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Do you ever wonder what your teenager is going through when they're preparing to leave home and enter the real world? I'm Shimon Liai, and in my new podcast, The Competition, I'll give you an inside look into the pressures and expectations high school girls have to face.
I think I need to make a good first impression, or at least an impressive first impression.
We're going to follow 50 teenage girls as they spend 2 weeks in Mobile, Alabama, competing in the largest cash scholarship competition exclusively for high school girls. You'll hear the silly, intimate moments.
Why are you so amazing?
Like, I want to be you guys.
And the anxiety that comes with being an ambitious girl in America.
My whole life, I've told myself that I need to be a 35-year-old professional.
Is the pressure too much to handle? From Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery, this is The Competition. Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.